The Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast is presented by DraftKings Sportsbook. Sign up for DraftKings Sportsbook by using promo code RTRS and brought to you by Adam Kasebe, the official realtor of the process. His cell is 302-864-8643. LL Pavorsky Jewelers, where Rights to Ricky Sanchez listeners go and get engaged. Body Bio, get 20% off any Body Bio product at bodybio.com with code MIKESTUMMY. All one word. And Kinetic Skateboarding, get 9.1% off first order with promo code Dave Silver. On the show today, a big win for the Sixers. When we were going through their schedule the rest of the way, we did not have this as a likely win, but a big win on the backs, as you would predict it, of Kelly Oubre and Tobias Harris. We say goodbye to Kenneth Lofton Jr. Mo Bamba starting over Paul Reed seems to have invigorated Paul Reed. Joel Embiid talks. Michael Rubin also talks, and our friend and comedian Matt Goldich, a writer on the Seth Meyers, is going to join us for the mailbag. He's got a new comedy stand-up special on YouTube called No Questions Asked, which you can see at youtube.com/Matt Goldich. We have a new shirt that's available. We will go to print in the next few days, assuming the Sixers don't sign anyone. It's got all the names on the back. You remember the all the names on the back shirt. We redid it with all the names on the back, with a new Say the Name design on the front, thanks to our friends at Scheib Vintage Sports, where you can order it. Order it now in the comments of this podcast, and CJ will put it in the chat. Kinetic Skateboarding. Oh, yeah. I love following the Kinetic Skateboarding social accounts on Twitter and Instagram. Today, I learned about the NB Numeric Trail Pack 480s. Sweet looking shoe. Now, they have New Balance at Kinetic Skateboarding that you're not going to find anywhere else. Same with Vans, same with Converse, same with Nikes. But I love the NB Numeric Trail Pack 40s. I don't think they're actually trail shoes. I think they just look like trail shoes. But man, they look rugged. They look fucking rugged. Check them out at kineticskateboarding.com. Use code Dave Silver for 9.1% off your first order. Without any further ado, Amos and the Chef. Welcome to the Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast. I'm Spike Eskin, along with a guy who we must tell our star is too bright for him here. That is one Mike Levin.
What a win.
Huge win. Huge win. Wins like this are the sort of win that keep you out of the play-in.
Oh, I'm thrilled. Like that was a huge, that was great. That was a real, just a team win on another national television game.
Inconceivable. They've never been on national television this much.
Play someone else.
Yeah. Inconceivable.
And it was a Hubie Brown game. Hubie always more awake in the daytime, so I did think this was a better version of him. One of the other Hubie games, it was like he was dying in front of us. It was really like I wanted to call somebody.
I'd rather listen to Hubie at 114 years old than JJ Redick.
No,
I would rather hear Hubie. I'd rather hear, actually, after Hubie passes, I would still rather hear Hubie than
JJ Redick. Oh, man. Ridiculous. Yeah. Ridiculous. Somebody let that guy go to bed. The longest 7 minutes of my life in the fourth quarter.
Oh my God. They were dying to blow it.
Gasping for offense. Anything at all. Several coming close to 8 second violations. Just please end the game. Running clock. Somebody. But free throws to ice it. I mean, as a team, 29 of 31 from the line. I've been saying that like all year, really. Like that is a huge advantage. Obviously, with Joel, they get to the line like so much less without Joel there. But to get to the line 31 times and to hit 29 of them, that rules. You know, they went down 11-0 early.
Jesus Christ.
Wow.
Sorry.
on a nice post-game win pod.
I know. You're going to blame CJ
for not producing.
I know. Ridiculous. That's okay. All me.
They go down 11-0 early. They bounce back. Like, they obviously an imperfect game, but they're clawing it together. And I thought they passed the ball well. I loved how well they passed in the Charlotte game. They had so many assists in that game. It felt like for weeks and weeks, it was just like, they're going ISO, so much ISO, so much ISO. And there's more flow to the team. There's more togetherness. I love Kyle Lowry. I love him. Having Kyle Lowry and Nick Batum on this team, obviously, like, nothing's going to matter until Joel comes back, and not a good Buddy Hield game, which also kind of doesn't matter until Joel comes back and you see it all together. But like, having just two quick processors on adults. A team,
two grown-ups. Yeah.
Who, like, and Lowry, obviously Batum's really fast and his little choppy Isaiah Pacheco footsteps, but like, Lowry's fast and fast processing and just makes the right pass and makes the right read and makes it like a big, you know, takes a charge on the defensive end, gets his hand in their defensive end. Like, this is, obviously Dallas got hot and they scored 40 in the fourth quarter, whatever, but this is one of the most impressive non-Embiid defensive efforts that the Sixers have had. They forced 17 turnovers. I think they had 16 in the third quarter. Dallas started, you know, came together in the fourth once they figured it out, but a really just a great, we can go guy by guy, but like, man, great team win. Everybody contributed. Maxi banged his head, went to the locker room, came back, played pretty good. Like,
definitely has a concussion. Certainly won't play the next three games.
For sure. Yeah, but Maxi and Dallas to get that win on the road. Every win feels like just gasping for like competence and another. We got one. Like surviving. Everything just surviving each day, and it's a survive in advance until Joel comes back. So I was thrilled. I love that game. What a blast that game was.
Yeah, that was that game was a true relief as the, you know, two things we mentioned during our last pod, just about, we went through the schedule and we looked for games that they should win, you know, games that they would be favored. And we had 9 of the final 25 games or something like that. And that only gets you to 42 wins. And the only way they get to 45 or 46 is with games like this. It was it should be noted, though incredibly predictable, when we do the podcast, we're like, this is the worst Tobias Harris has ever played in the history of Tobias Harris. He comes back with a 31-pointer and a 28-pointer, which they wouldn't have won if he hadn't played so well. But when you're making $40 million and your primary job is to score points, you should be able to do that. So I'm glad he did that. The thing that made me the most nervous during this game, the reason why I felt like it was going to be a loss with 7 minutes left, is when Oubre had that stretch in the fourth, I was like, all right, well, this is simply not going to last.
Mm-hmm.
And what things like, and this isn't an Oubre thing, but just generally in terms of basketball teams, you mentioned them moving the ball particularly well. When one guy gets super hot like that, it sort of throws a disruption in the rhythm of the offense, I think, for everyone else. So when it stopped, it felt like they didn't have any idea how to get offense going. And you did mention getting the ball up the court. I've had a frustration all year with Maxi, and I think he learned it from Harden. This thing where he crosses the half court line at like 16 and a half constantly.
Just too close. It's going to burn him in the playoffs. There's going to be one.
Yes.
100%. Building this. It's like a setup. It's like there's a gun under the table and the camera shows it. And you're like, eventually that gun or the bomb is going to go off like something. And it's just like, that's going to happen at such a bad time.
And I don't understand why he does it. When they were trying to break the press, mm-hmm. I don't know if they were doing this on purpose, but he would like a running back that doesn't go right to the hole. He'd run the wrong way on the baseline, sort of run into the corner. And he did it 3 straight times. The times when they were having trouble getting the ball across the half court line. The one time where Lowry ended up calling a timeout right
heady
at 16.
Timeout. I love, yeah, a heady timeout.
Very heady timeout that really pissed off Luka. So yeah, a great game from the classic good Tobias game where the shots are falling and the little, you know, 14 foot jumpers are going in. It was a good game from Tobias in that way, but a good attacking the basket game from Oubre as well. You know, he's been cold from three for a long time. I think he hit 1 in this game,
yeah.
But getting to the rim was really strong. And it's a shame that Maxi hit his head because it looked like we were in for like a 47-point Maxi game during that first quarter, not just because he was hot, but because they couldn't guard him. You know,
well, let's start with Maxey, because like everything started with him in the first quarter, getting hot as hell. With the bigs and drop, it was such a good mix of blowing by guys, getting to his right, had a couple finishes with his left too. It was a good mix of blow by into the floater was working. And then, okay, now they're playing that into my step back. And he was just cooking, man. And they still isn't getting enough calls. Like, he got banged a bunch of times. They didn't give him anything. But all of that stuff of he is unguardable one-on-one with whatever. And they have some good defenders on this team. Derek Jones, Dante Exum, Josh Green. And he just blew by all of them. And then they had to change their entire defense to be, well, we're just going to, every screen that comes, we're just sending two and getting the ball out of his hands. And so I would have loved, they started denying him the ball the whole game. I would have loved to see him become a screener a little bit more, like leverage the attention he's getting to get other people open, like a Maxey Buddy Hield screen. I think that maybe they would have switched it or something like that. But if they're so attuned to Maxey, then it would have been kind of cool to see what happens if he starts leveraging a screener thing, and maybe they'll use that in the playoffs or when Embiid's back. But like seeing Maxey command that much, then all of a sudden the whole team, the whole court opens up. And I think Nick Nurse did a beautiful job late in the game to use Batum as the screener.
Yeah.
And then Dan Olinger pointed this out on Twitter as well. And Maxey gets the ball out. I don't think Maxey turned the ball over at all, making those tough passes as he's getting blitzed. And then it's Batum having to pick the team apart in a 4-on-3 situation. And so for a team that desperately, desperately needs good offense or needs someone to draw a double team without Joel, for Maxey to be able to do it in the first quarter and then force Dallas to change their entire defensive scheme the rest of the game, like obviously eventually they ran out of juice, but incredible on Maxey's part. And the kind of thing where when you think about, okay, he's carrying them, he's carrying this team when Joel's out or when Joel's sitting in the playoffs, like these are the kinds of things that are going to happen. Like you need him to command that and to earn that, and to earn the respect of a defensive minded coach like Jason Kidd, I think is a ton of respect, and for the team to hold on after that. He still needs like a little more change of pace. Like he still needs a little, he got caught like with nowhere to go on a transition drive with where Luka was kind of just standing there and Maxey didn't. It's either, I just need a little bit more, but that's like the stuff he builds out. Like take 5% of Kyrie's bag and like put it into him, like the like change of pace, balance, like slow down type of thing. What I think would empower him even more and be able to finish in a bunch of different ways. But great Maxey game. Glad he was okay. Lauren Rosen said that the Dallas physicians checked him out and cleared him and stuff. So hopefully it's not a concussion, but the offense would not have been cooking as much. It's so much easier to score when you're 4-on-3, when somebody else is commanding so much attention and you have to go, there's nobody coming over to help. And you just got to beat one guy instead of beating so many.
The other thing that I think helps when they decide to double Maxey is the fact that they have another competent ball handler on the team who can be on the court. Like having Kyle Lowry as somebody who can do something with the ball after he passes it to him, and by the way, adds another competent shooter and a smart basketball player. But I think it makes going from one competent ball handler to two is a massive increase. And I think having Kyle Lowry on the ball really helps him with that too.
Yeah. Not perfect game from Lowry. Like he was one of nine from the field, like not.
Yeah,
elite.
But he still played well. I wouldn't even, eye test wise, I don't even care that he was one of nine on that.
No, I totally agree. I mean, like he's taking the right shots. He's got to hit that layup at the end. He did a couple nice blowbys. I do think he still has a good amount of juice in there. Hopefully he won't be playing 33 minutes a night when it counts, but like, I thought he played great. The processing speed, hit aheads, anticipating, like he gets paint touches. That's huge for this team. So many strips. It says he only had one steal, but like his hands were in there the whole game. Like they got a lot of stuff out of there. He just makes plays. And the lob to Mo Bamba
was
down
incredible.
The lane.
Yeah.
Like what a absolute gift wrap birthday present. Not my birthday, for me, from
can't
Kyle
believe,
Lowry and Mo Bamba. He's never, Mo Bamba's never,
caught it.
Yeah. Unbelievable catch. It was like, athletic and agile, and Lowry to make that pass, it was beautiful. And what a gift it has been over the last few months that they have lob throwers now and guys that are willing to finish it. Lowry's just huge, man. I mean, he's really very useful. I would love to get him down to like 20 to 24 minutes a game, like when Melton's back, that kind of thing. But like, he is just an incredibly helpful player in every area of the floor. And the team is better off with him. Obviously, Pat Bev was fun here and played better offensively, but I think Lowry is a way, way, way better fit, way more necessary, vital part of this team.
The Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast brought to you by Adam Kasebe, the official realtor of The Process. You spell that K-S-E-B-E, Kasebe. His team is based out of Long and Foster in Bethany Beach in Delaware, and he is the guy, the realtor you want to go to if you want a home on the Delaware beaches. Where is the place to go? My wife and I have vacationed in the Delaware beaches for several years. We took 2 years off and went to Maine, but we're going back to Lewis this year. I love the Delaware beaches. I think they provide everything that the Jersey ones do and are less annoying. But if you're going to buy a home, definitely a better choice. When you compare the property taxes of the Jersey beaches compared to Delaware, it's not even close. But those houses are in demand. You need a great realtor who can help you through that process, find the homes for you before they get listed somewhere, really have the know-how, know where things are. Adam Kasebe, the official realtor of The Process, is the guy to do that. Whether you want to be in Lewis or Rehoboth or Bethany or Dewey or any of the Delaware beaches, Kasebe is the guy to do it. And if you need a home or are going to sell a house in a different state, not Delaware or Maryland, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, New York, wherever, California, you go to Adam Kasebe, the official realtor of The Process, and he will interview realtors from his giant Rolodex of realtors and find the one exactly for you. So you only need Adam. Again, his cell phone number, 302-864-8643, 302-864-8643. You can call or text him, or adam@processrealtor.com. Adam Kasebe, the official realtor of The Process. So for the last two games, Mo Bamba has started. And sort of, I think Nick Nurse using a bit of the same tact that Doc Rivers did, in that the best way to get through to Paul Reed, it seems like, is on court time. Like, that really seems like what it is. Reed played specifically better against Charlotte. And I thought for the first two and a half or three quarters, played really, really well against Dallas. And I think, honestly, I think Bamba starting has focused Reed a little bit better. He's certainly been more tenacious as a rebounder than we have seen, I think, by and large this year. I still want him to set better screens. And the offense he had in this game felt like, even that three, felt like it was in the flow of the offense as opposed to like, what the fuck is this guy doing? So Bamba starts the last two games, played really poorly against Charlotte, but I thought it sort of focused Paul Reed, and we ended up with a better Paul Reed, I think, because of that.
Did you see who was mic'd up?
No, who was mic'd up?
Bebo Paul.
Oh, no, I didn't even notice. Bro, I'm watching these games, and it's funny. People complain about the telecast or broadcast. I swear I'm not hearing any of it. So, no, I didn't see or hear any.
I love it. Bebo Paul getting the mic'd up.
Hubie Brown's a big Bebo Paul guy, by the way.
Beautiful. Well, yeah. I mean, Bebo does play well in front of Hubie Brown, which I guess is a point in Hubie's favor. I love Paul off the bench. I don't see a reason to start him. You play Bamba at the beginning, play Bamba 14 minutes as a starter. I don't really give a shit. Like, let Paul come in. Let his role be the same role that it's going to be when Embiid is here. Like, let him have that mindset.
Sure.
And if that is the, like, you know, energy guy, 6-7 minutes into the game, when all of a sudden he comes in and starts just, like, fucking shit up, and similar to, like, what TJ was like in his early part of his career, when he would come off the bench and then the other team would be like, oh God, here's this dickhead. Like, he's going to press me full court. Like, B-ball being a guy that's going to go like, oh, he's just going to be a havoc on the offensive glass and just get his hands in everywhere. I love it. I think he is a guy that wants to have a role and wants to know what his responsibilities are, and to come in off the bench and just be like, I'm coming off the bench every game. Bamba should still play less than B-ball, but as far as starting, I think B-ball should, this is the right, like, he won't have to like ramp himself down once Embiid gets back. Like, this is the role, this is what you do. I mean, a great strip on Kyrie in isolation, and then to hit that above the break three was awesome. In the mic'd up segment, Maxi said, that's how you shoot the ball with confidence, which I loved. I think his decision-making has improved lately. Like, it's offensive rebounds and kickouts. His little like 3-foot hook shot has been falling. You know, he blocked the fuck out of Josh Green. He had a couple big blocks in Charlotte.
Had a dunk.
Had a big dunk.
Yep.
He even, you know, he mishandles a pass on the roll, but he dives on the ground and saves the possession still. Like he's just, I just ultimately trust that B-ball in the, you know, now that Embiid's going to play more, but like 18 to 24 minutes a game role is going to give you more than he takes away. And you just live with it, and you live with the weirdness, and you live with the funk. But like, he's just good, man. He's got the, and Nick goes small at the end to match Dallas going small. I don't find that to be an insult to B-ball Paul. I think that
he's done that more over the last several weeks too, gone small a lot more.
And that's fine. I think you don't want to like expose him. I think that's the difference with him and Doc is obviously not the B-ball of it, but Doc will just stick with a guy that had been playing well. Because it's like, well, hey, this is what we're doing. He's doing this rather than like going, I appreciate what he's doing, but we're not going to like expose him to having to play out on the perimeter too much. And then like all of a sudden it's nobody back for rebounds and stuff. I really love the B-ball game, 13-7-3, passing the ball well, just like roaming nicely. I thought he was a plus 14 that led the team in 28 minutes. It was a great, great, excellent B-ball game after another great B-ball game in Charlotte. I'm happy for the guy. This is what he should do. This is him. Do this. And Nick, and like, yes, not the highest IQ player, not the most controlled player that is going to be on the team. And you do have to like sort of set parameters for him. But like, however he can be coached to do exactly this, where you want him to have the freedom to do some stuff, but you also really need him to do the things that he's actually good at, makes it... That's the dance you got to do when you're coaching him. Like, how do you empower somebody without being like, but not that, like, not that. But
well, it's funny. You say like he wants a role. I'm not sure that he wants a role, but I do think he operates better when he knows exactly what he is to do, when there's not too much to think about. So,
Tobias.
It's fine.
He's back. Wow. This is the dance, man.
I'm not going to crush him, but I'm also not playing this game. So
no, I'm not saying he's bad. He is who he is. That's why it wasn't the, like, I wasn't saying like, let's give him the Trey Turner ovation or something. Like, he is exactly this guy where he's going to die for a couple weeks and then he'll come back and be like, oh, this is what I do again. Right. Let me like recenter myself. Like he is back to shooting quick trigger off the catch from deep. He had 6 attempts from 3 in this game. He had 8 in Charlotte, 5 of 8 and 3 of 6. Obviously very good. It helps when they go in, but even just taking them, he had 2 big corner threes in a row in the third quarter, which was huge. One on one side of the corner, one on the other corner. And once he shows that quick trigger, then they have to close out faster. And then he gets to attack from there. Plus Maxey's bringing 2 guys out and then there's nobody back to do anything. He hits the big dagger floater from like 5 feet away or whatever. It was really good. And I like him using the middle of the floor, like work the middle of the floor, which is traditionally a Joel spot. Get to your mid range, spray out to shooters. And if you can blow by Luka, who's obviously not, you know, sliding his feet so well defensively, he finds B-ball in the dunker spot for a nice little look underneath. It was really a solid game. I do think, obviously, Luka gets his. He's very good. But I do think Tobias did a solid job defensively on Luka, too. Like, I thought that you wanted to, like, be big, show hands, slap the ball away a couple times. I thought it was a really, really good Tobias game after some truly catastrophic, they simply will not win basketball games if Tobias is as bad as he had been. And to have 2 good games in a row is really, like, what an exhale for that.
I've got no comment. He's just fine. I'm glad. I can't do it anymore with him. I'm not going to talk about him anymore. I'm not going to crush him when he has bad games, and I'm not talking about what he did well when he has good games. I'm simply going to let you do it, and then I'll move on to the next thing.
I'm fine with that.
I'm done with the Tobias roller coaster. I can't wait till he's off the team. Do you want to talk about Oubre?
Did you happen to notice how many assists he had?
He had 4.
4, and I'm going to have to go back to the tape, check the scorekeeper, see if there was one that he wasn't going to
get. Alex Rucker on the...
I got to get Rucker on it to merely bump that up a little bit. Look, you were right. Seems like he hasn't hit a 3 in 6 months. Mm-hmm. Was 0-for-5 from 3 at one time. Eventually hits one later in the game. But he was missing everything. He barely played in the first half. His defense was fine. But like, I love a guy that can just go, I'm going to put my head down and get all the way to the basket. And he does that. And that was, especially when Maxey got hurt in the second half, like that was their offense. And it was, he had that flush to get him started, to get him off the schneid. And then the next few minutes, the entire offense of this team, like late third, early fourth, was Kelly driving left and getting downhill. And it's like nothing cute. I don't love the fadeaways. I don't love the mid-range. Like, he's trying to do too much. Get downhill, use your length and athleticism, and get to the rim or hit those little like lefty floaters from like 5-6 feet away. It was great. It was huge. And then in the fourth quarter, some great passes for buckets, including a stop the bleeding corner three for Tobias. And then the free throw to Isaac to put it to four where they couldn't come back. Really a wonderful Kelly Oubre game. Sometimes the shots aren't going to fall, but like having a guy at that size and that athleticism who can D up enough, obviously an imperfect defender, but like a live body, and who can make plays in the half court and get to the rim. Absolutely massive for this team. Really hoping that his role gets downsized once Embiid gets back and he has just like attacking closeouts and that kind of thing back, and being in the dunker spot, which he hasn't been in quite some time. Three big offensive rebounds. The whole team off really attacked the offensive glass really well. Huge Kelly game. Necessary. So big. Thank God. Oh my God. Needed it.
Well, they will need games like this from him and Harris if they're going to win games that they're not supposed to win. And by the way, as we saw with Harris, we're probably going to need them for games to win games that they should win, like games like Charlotte as well. So we'll need offense out of those guys. Before we move on to Jeff Doughton Jr., is there anything else from this game?
I thought it was a good Nick Batum game. He had 11 rebounds, which is big, three steals. Like
good defense.
One of the steals was
awesome, was a Covington-esque.
Yes.
Stick the hand out in Nowheresville where the pass went, deflected it away, and started a fast break. I love
absolutely
those steals.
I mean, like, imagine what this is going to look like once you can remove KJ Martin and Mo Bamba and put Embiid, Covington, and Melton back in there. Obviously, health permitting. But if that happens, like, this team's really good. This team is really good with a lot of very versatile, long, heady defenders that can just, like, make shit really tough for the other team. I'm very, very excited about that. I'm just dying for health. I thought Batum was great. He misses all the wide open threes he takes. He only hits the crazy ones where he can't dip it. He has no release point whatsoever, including he did hit one off an Oubre assist, which does count as a crazy shot. Any Oubre assist is impressive for me. Like I said, like him picking apart the 4-on-3 situation kept their offense afloat. He had a really beautiful high-low bounce pass to a cutting B-ball dunk. Kicked it out for a Kelly three. That was nice. There was one play when, you know, against Luka, you just got to make him think. Like, he's an incredible offensive player. If you just sit back, he's just going to pick you apart. You got to, like, show him different looks, and you mix up the coverages. So you can't just let him bait you into helping from the strong side corner, which he did to Maxey a bunch of times, so he can just kick it out to an easy three for Derrick Jones Jr., who played great, to spite Daryl after me clamoring for Derrick Jones all offseason. Batum reads that play. And he reads it so quickly that Luka kicks it to the corner and it looked like it was a pass to Batum. Like, he was standing there already for it. And it's just like, he's just a smart basketball player. And this team has now racked up enough smart basketball players where they can just steal the margins into their favor on those types of plays. I thought it was great. Not a good buddy game.
He's a tough watch, man. He's going to be much better with Embiid, I hope.
Absolutely.
He just doesn't shoot quick enough, and he's, you know, everybody on this team, when they're asked to do more than they can do, this is a team that is, every player is really good when they're doing what they're supposed to be doing, and then looks incredibly compromised when they have to do more than that. Man, Hield thinks it's Buddy Hield time a lot, almost as much as Kelly Oubre thinks it's Kelly Oubre time.
Sure. It was a lot of buddy dribbling. So much buddy dribbling. Yeah, and I think that part of that was because they were denying the ball from Maxey. But he still moves the ball well. I think he's been a better like team player offensively than the book on him has been. Maybe he's in like best behavior mode. But 4 assists tonight. He's still 3 of 8 from deep, which is great. A really dumb foul at the end of the first half to gift them 2 points. If they lost this game, I would have really blamed him for all of that, because that was a brutal foul, stupid foul. But his gravity, even if he's not playing that well, his gravity is so massive. Like, watch how they just get open lanes in transition because somebody has to stay glued to Buddy at the 3-point line. But yeah, I think like he's still ready to pull from deep. Not quite as quick trigger as you would want him to be. And he kind of has a little bit of that Tobias tippy toes on the line thing. He needs to be a little bit close. But I've been excited about him as a, he's shown more like connector behavior than I think he did earlier in his career than people respect. Like there was one play, Tobias is posting up. Tobias gets doubled.
What a terrible, just all of that, the parts of that sentence were like, Tobias is posting up and he gets doubled. Hey, just a bad decision for everyone.
Tobias can punish mismatches all he wants. He can shoot over him. When the mid-range is going, absolutely huge. So he's posting up, they double him, which again, like that you win. 90% of basketball is like trying to draw an advantage. And once you start doubling Tobias in the post, you have won. Buddy makes a really nice cut middle. Tobias makes the pass to Buddy. The big has to rotate over, and Buddy instantly swings it to the opposite corner for a Lowry three that went in. It was a really, really nice heady play. And for a guy that is just known as a shooter, like there's more to him than that. And again, like his game is not going to be fully optimized until Joel is back. He is obviously overextended. He can't like blow by anybody really. Like
he's very not, slow.
He's not slow elite player. As a step back. He doesn't have a ton of moves, but like he's competent in enough ways where like he'll get you a mid-range. He'll get you a sneaky drive to the basket to finish like in the guts of the game in the playoff situation. He's not like, you know, he's not just a three-point shooter, which I think is helpful that there's more to his game than that. But it is most of his game, and that will not be seen until Joel's fully there. So not a great Buddy game. I did like that everybody else was playing so well, Lowry, Batum, that Nick didn't go back to Buddy. It's kind of just like, go with the hot hand. This is why I like Nick Nurse as a head coach, because I think he's willing to ride with what's going well and adjust and go like if the lineup of Lowry, Maxey, Oubre, Tobias, and Batum was like holding on, that's the right play. You don't need Buddy to come in and try to run Buddy ball. So I just had a great time this game. I loved it. I was so scared that they were going to lose.
Toward the end, it seemed like they were going to blow.
It really was like, there's a couple like Kyrie rim outs that you're just like, oh fuck. And then like, there's one rebound that Tobias like banged off his knee. And you're like, come on, just fucking hold on. Why is the clock going so slow?
Yeah.
But a really, really great, great win. I think we've said this a couple times, but this definitely at a time when this feels like they haven't beaten a good team outside of Cleveland in 6 months, a really great win on the road against a pretty hot Dallas team. I loved it. I'm happy about it.
The Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast brought to you by LL Pavorsky Jewelers, where Rights to Ricky Sanchez listeners go and get engaged. The first sponsor of the Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast will be traveling. One of, I think, two sponsors that are traveling on Fly the Process. I know Mortgage CS is going. I know LL is going. I don't think anybody else is going. LL is very close to our hearts. He is a knighted member of the Ricky community. And if you're buying an engagement ring and you even think about going to a different jeweler, you are excommunicated from the Ricky community. You have to go to LL. Over 380 Rights to Ricky Sanchez listeners have purchased engagement rings from LL. He is going to get you great jewelry at a great price, but most importantly, he is not going to pressure you. He's going to take the time, show you respect, get you an absolutely perfect piece of jewelry, and make sure that as you walk away, you feel happy, fulfilled, and you know if you ever need a jeweler again, that you go back to LL. What a good man, trustworthy, so focused on customer service that he wants you to make an appointment to get engagement ring. Doesn't want you to just wander in, wants to have everything ready for you. To do that, give him a call, 215-627-2252. Email him, lee@llpavorsky.com. Tweet at him, @llpavorsky. He is a generous supporter of our charitable efforts and Mama T's Community Fridge and Providence Animal Center. LL Pavorsky Jewelers
would always make the shot off an Oubre pass, which by the way, his fourth, I just looked it up, his fourth game this season with four assists.
Well, four is not five, buddy.
And remember, I was drunk when I said that. If I'd only said four, I'd be in such...
You didn't.
I definitely didn't.
But yeah.
I'd be in such great position.
Yeah.
He's doing great.
This is from Ben. Before we get to Jeff Doughton Jr., This is from Ben. Writes RickySanchez@gmail.com. First, I can't listen to Mike complain about not being on the Jumbotron anymore, so I thought I would chime in here. He was on TV a few times. You could see him in the crowd with those courtside seats. I believe it was during free throws. I didn't see Spike, though. Does that balance it out, or does being on the Jumbotron mean more than being on television?
I mean, I'm on television because one time I got a loose ball, yep, which was pretty big. I got on the floor.
Yeah.
And I was just under the basket. I don't know. I think it doesn't balance it out.
And the basketball question, if the Sixers played a full 82 game schedule with this roster without Embiid, how many games do you think that they win?
Oh my God.
They're 35 one team, right? Something like that.
I'd say 30.
Yeah. Something like that. And you know, a lot of people have used how bad they have been without Embiid as sort of like a condemnation of the job that Morey did and how the team is. But like, them being good without Embiid is not the point, to be honest with you. Like, yeah, a team being good enough without their best player is usually indicative of those teams that happen to be good in regular season and don't thrive in the playoffs. I think you could look at those old Hawks teams. You could look at even Milwaukee during the Bud years. You can look at the Utah teams with Mitchell and Gobert. Those sort of like teams that just sort of hum along during the regular season. Not that you don't want to be that, but that is not the point. The point is to be the best possible team when Embiid gets back. So
yeah, I mean, like, I think they'd be better if Melton and Covington were healthy, and sure, if they had Lowry and Hield the whole time. I think they are gelling. I think the things are starting to coalesce in a nice way. There doesn't seem to be as much confusion either defensively or offensively. So it's looking better, but I think ultimately, like, Maxey is good, but he's not best player on a playoff team good.
No, not yet, at least.
And there's just not enough. Like, B-Ball's not an elite, like, rim-protecting big, so they can get to the rim too much. And But it's been good. And the team looks... Look, remember this offseason? I've been meaning to do this. Remember this offseason when we were talking about all the James Harden trades, and I suggested Jordan Poole as a possible...
I do.
Something? Yeah. And that was me trying to think outside the box.
Yeah. But sometimes you got to stay in the box.
But I got to stay in the box. And that would have been such a tremendous mistake. He did play well the other night, but he has been so bad. And so like almost like sad bad. And so not all the ideas are winners. It was pitching and getting through August, September of this podcast, but man, I'm glad that didn't happen. Man, I'm glad that I was not listened to. There was a long list of possible trades that didn't get there, but this was one that I'm happy that they avoided.
So the Sixers release Kenneth Lofton Jr.
Sad.
Very sad.
Coaches are weird, man.
Well, like, he also played probably not good.
He was excellent in the G League. He played one like 4-minute stretch at the end of a game and like turned it over like four times the day he got to the team. And Nick Nurse was like, fuck him, I'm never playing him.
Nah, but he also probably sucks. You know?
He doesn't suck. No. I don't think that he's like the answer or anything, but it's just more of a comment on like, if you fuck up in specific ways in front of a coach, they will never forget it. And they will, especially if you're a two-way guy, just like never give you another shot. And he never got another shot. And so that's a bummer. I hope he succeeds somewhere else and gets a little bit of NBA playing time. I do think that he could be something. But Jeff Dowden Jr.,
what's the name of your Kenneth Lofton on Alyssa's basketball team that did something wrong in front of you once and then you never played?
No, I play everybody.
Okay.
I was going to say no comment, but I do play everybody.
Jeff Dowden Jr., 26 years old, play for Rhode Island, currently averaging 18 points on 48% field goal shooting, 38.4% from three, 2.5 free throws a game, 6 assists, 3 rebounds. What is Jeff Dowden Jr.'s deal?
Yeah, I mean, he played on some fun Rhode Island teams just before the pandemic. He's a fun player, fun combo guard type of player, has turned himself. He's always been athletic and pretty good with the ball in his hands, has turned himself into a really solid defender. And I don't have much, idealistic hope for him, like breaking out or anything, but a solid player, fun guy to root for, will like steady the sort of like Javonte Smartish, like will steady the floor. Can make a shot, can make the right play, that kind of deal.
Sixers still have two regular roster spots open.
Yeah, and he played for Nick Nurse in Toronto.
all of the cuts, all of the players available now, March 1st was the deadline, could play in the playoffs if they were not on a team after March 1st. You would think if whoever's available is going to be available. So you would think if they were going to use those roster spots, they would have done it already. It seems like they're not going to.
Maybe. Okay. Did Mike Muscala signs with the Thunder, which is the scene of the... And then, whatever the opposite of crime is, the scene and of then, the celebration.
Shake Milton is going to sign with the Knicks, or did sign with the Knicks.
That made me sad.
Yeah, but
that
he's how many shots can you? How many?
Yeah,
chances can
yeah.
You get?
I mean, yeah. I love Shake. It'll be weird to see him in a Knicks jersey, and especially if he gets some run, which he might because they're banged up. It'll be weird to see him against the Sixers.
So Joel Embiid spoke for the first time since the surgery. He did a press availability the other day during practice. There were some, he didn't say anything I thought like, you know, super revelatory, but this first one talked about how long the knee had hampered him. By the way, Pat Bev, I think, had mentioned that the same thing, that like for a while he was using like a numbing agent on his knee. But here is Joel Embiid after practice the other day. Actually, rather doing this, you can't hear it. This is not your fault, CJ.
These videos are always so quiet.
Yeah, just somebody fucking mic it. Somebody put a lav on him, like CJ did it. Put a lav on CJ, go put a lav on him, put a lav on. So the first thing is that he said he hadn't been 100% for a couple of months. So it does, look, Joel loves the credit for playing while hurt. That is one thing that he does love, I think, if we're being fair. It does bring...
There's a little bit of doc in there for our guy.
It does bring into question how long the knee thing was there, they knew or didn't know about it. But there was, you know, whatever. I don't know. The second thing is he said he would come back no matter the playoff position. You know, whether they were in the play-in or not would not matter to him. That, you know, he said, I only have 20 years or so to do this. So you have to take advantage of all of it. Nice little, I think, Joel Easter egg in there. You can only do it for 20 years. And I agree that even if they're in the play-in and he is able to play, he has to come back.
Yes. No, there's no question about it. And MOC had a nice, like, don't be afraid of the play-in article.
Yeah, I agree
with him. I just would rather not. Like, I would just rather not have the season come down to one or two games. And that, you know, obviously we've seen balls bounce the other way. Game sevens haven't been great to us.
No.
So a play-in is like, Game seven. So it's like would love to avoid it. Games like today will help them hopefully skate by. Did you see the Chris Paul quotes about Daryl?
Yeah, that he told him he wasn't going to. So essentially the quote was, Daryl asked me if I wanted to go to Oklahoma City and told me I wouldn't trade you anywhere that you wouldn't want to go. Chris Paul said, no, he didn't want to go to Oklahoma City. And then Daryl traded him to Oklahoma City. That's what Chris Paul said.
And then called him after he saw it. And Chris Paul, and he was like, yeah, it just happened so fast. And Chris was like, just ask me a question. Did you tell me you wouldn't trade me to Oklahoma City? And Daryl said, yeah, but, and he's like, that's all I needed to hear. And it's just like, we said it about Harden. Mm-hmm. We said it about Pat Bev. Mm-hmm. Like the reputation is there, man. Like the reputation is there that Daryl does not give a shit about his players and will not do right by you. And part of that is at least somewhat true. I think it's somewhat true about every GM. Like they'll make the best decision for the team. And if that means you have to go to a shitty town that you don't like, although I do like Oklahoma City because Boomtown was a fucking sick book. Then he'll do it. But I think that's most GMs, but you just don't like having the reputation about it. And it's just something I'm concerned about as you're looking for that like third star to come in between Maxi and Embiid. You just like, there's going to be, if the one or two guys becomes available and one of those two guys says fuck Daryl because Chris or Pat Bev or Harden like told me that he's a piece of shit, then like, they're not going to come here. So, and it's just like those little, like that's the small things that like could burn you. And so I do obviously think Daryl cares someone about his players and wants to do right by him if he can, but like there's got to be more of an awareness of it, whether that's getting Elton out there and talking more about it or some PR something, I don't know, but you just like the snowball has snowballed and I don't want it to burn them. And I think it might.
So Mitchell brings up on the YouTube comments, which I think is apt, though it doesn't matter if it's just the perception or if it's real. Mitchell says the Rockets owner did that trade, the Oklahoma City trade, not Morey. Now, like, there was reporting at the time that sort of like
Hinkie didn't draft Okafor. Like, it's sort of just like, it is what it is.
Yeah, you get credit for it, whether it's yours or not.
That's it.
If we're going to give him credit for, you know, drafting Maxey or something, then he's got to take the lumps for doing that. So, one final thing just about Embiid's injuries. I just thought this was interesting. Tiki Barber was talking the other day on WFAN. Tiki, who, you know, obviously played for the Giants, had a great career, was hurt a lot earlier in his career. And they were talking about often injured players. And Tiki, who was a professional athlete and was hurt a lot, said this. And I wonder about it when thinking about Embiid. Go ahead, CJ.
At some point, it becomes your responsibility to be healthy. Right. And it's you can blame the coach, you can blame the grind, you can do all these other things, but at some point it's your responsibility. I remember this as a player because I couldn't stay healthy early in my career. I was hurt all the damn time. And part of it wasn't my fault. The turf helped made me tear my PCL, my right knee. I was out. But then I had hamstring issues. I had shoulder issues. Like things just my knee would swell up. A part of it became on me. And I remember like consciously making the effort going to find a big strength and conditioning coach, Joe Carini, who passed away, may rest in peace. But he changed my mindset to preparing for seasons. And then all of a sudden, I became durable. I never missed games. I became strong as an ox. I got better. I got faster. I got all these things.
But ultimately,
it was on me. And I get tired of having to use the excuse of, oh, well, his coach just ran him into the ground. Just got some bad luck. Oh, yeah, you just... You know, he's too strong, Giancarlo Stanton. I get tired of having to find an excuse when ultimately it's got to be on the player. He's got to have the pride to prepare himself for the grind that he knows is coming, especially with so much on the line for these teams, because these opportunities are short.
So I think NBA players typically later in their career start taking their bodies a lot more seriously. Lowry, for one, is notable who did that. And that, you know, the older you get, the more you have to concentrate on it. I do think it is fair to wonder in the off season and during the season whether Joel takes conditioning and strength and his body seriously enough. And there is some of the injury stuff that is beyond his control, like Markel Fultz's shoulder into his face, for sure. But then you look at the
elbow into his face.
Sure. But then the other stuff, I think, is fair to wonder. And the other stuff, some of it could just be, you know, you're biologically, you know, more likely to be hurt than somebody else is. But I do think some of it is strength and conditioning and taking your body super seriously. And I wonder if Joel is going to do that, you know, before it is too late. Cause I don't, my gut is that he does not now. That's sort of like my gut.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. I mean, it seems like speculation on my part to say one way or the other, but like sometimes you get injured. Sometimes your body just like doesn't hold up. Sometimes the cartilage in your knee is fucked and you just can't do it. And like, I don't feel like there's a, you know, I think athletes are athletes and they want to be like mindset guys. And just like, I just decided I wasn't going to get hurt anymore.
Well, but that's not what he said. That's not what he said though.
A little bit.
No, but it's not.
He had a good strength and conditioning coach. Yeah. And like, I'm sure Embiid thinks his strength and conditioning coach is good. And some of that is about like him fully committing to it, whether that's diet or whatever the fuck. But like, I think some of it is also like, I just decided that it's on me now. And it's like, well, you could tear your ACL and it's not because... like, well, of anything.
Yes, for sure. But I can also tell you that even tearing your ACL, things that like that, like I'm not saying they are 100% controllable, but I am saying that the better condition you're in, the less likely you are to get injured. That is for sure. And I don't know about Embiid, but if I had to guess, my guess is that he has not hit the point in his career where he is at that yet. Now, like it is, I'm sure it's disheartening when you're always in some state of recovery from an injury to sort of like get in front of it and care even more. But it's certainly something to wonder about. Before we get to Matt, the Right Streaky Sanchez podcast is brought to you by Body Bio. Oh, what a good coincidence. Talk about your body. Here is Body Bio's Elite. Elite. Oh, by the way, Mike, I heard that Gut Plus probably a return this summer.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
So I was taking Eli today, played ball this morning.
Yes.
Took some Gut Plus, not cramping right now.
Eli, so Body Bio is a family-owned and operated supplement company right here in Jersey. I think they're in South Jersey is where they are. From like Mike Trout, I think you could say. And Body Bio, being a smaller supplement company, is good because things happen, like with Gut Plus, also happened with Calm, that there's sort of a supply chain problem in getting those getting those ingredients are tough. So you have to change your formula. And being a sort of small, nimble, smart company allows you to do those things. And being a big company sometimes makes those things harder. One of the products we love from Body Bio is this right here. It is Elite. Elite helps you be completely and totally hydrated with just a little bit in the morning and a little bit at night in your water or whatever you're drinking in the morning and in the evening with Elite. What Elite is, it is 100% pure electrolytes, electrolyte concentrate. So no sugar, no artificial flavors, no artificial colors. My dog's barking. All it is electrolytes. Drinking water is very, very, very important to stay hydrated, but having electrolytes along with the water is the secret weapon to staying hydrated. I think you should try it. Try Elite. It helped me with cramping in my feet, my calves, my hamstrings, all that stuff. I had horrible cramping problems. I no longer have them because of Elite. Go to bodybio.com. Use code MikesTummy. All one word, Mike's Tummy, for 20% off. And if you have tummy problems, try that butyrate in there, the sodium butyrate. Elite from Body Bio, bodybio.com, code Mike's Tummy for 20% off. Have a guest that will join us for some of the last part of the pod, which is the most fun part of the pod, in my opinion. Matt Goldich, who is a writer for Seth Meyers. Were you responsible for getting me and my wife into the Seth Meyers show years ago when Ange got us in there? Or was it Ange working there at the time? I can't even remember.
Ange has never worked there. Can you guys hear me? Am I good? I may have been indirectly responsible. What year was this? I don't remember it.
I think 10 years ago. I think she turned 30.
It may have been before. So the show started February of 2024. I started June of 2024. So if it was,
14,
it was,
you mean?
If it, yeah, 2014, yes. Yeah. So yeah. The show recently started, it's celebrated its 10-year anniversary.
And your first thing was like, I got to get Spike in there.
Yes, I was like, was before I've even made any sort of impression. No, it might have been. It might have been Ange. Well, if it was early on, I mean, they might have been desperate for anybody to get in there. I don't
you
know.
Really anybody. But
you know who Ange was working for at the time? Ange was working with Nick Lachey. So we actually saw Nick Lachey that day and saw Seth Meyers. A
that
very
must
big
be
day
why.
For a 30,
I mean, Nick Lachey can get you anything. He can get you in anything, any club. Yeah, that was I remember when Andrew was working for Nick Lachey, and I can tell you that was probably before my time.
So you have a new stand-up special out on YouTube right now called No Questions Asked, available on your YouTube channel, which is just your name, all one word. I have a stand-up question for you.
Okay.
As I went to, my wife and I went to see Shane Gillis at Radio City Music Hall last night.
Oh, wow. Nice.
It was really cool. Felt like a moment. He's having his, like, you know, I saw Dice at the Spectrum when I was 14. It feels like that, like he's having at that moment.
That so, feels a little bit like child endangerment. Seems like Dice at 14.
No,
but okay.
Man,
no, all right. Okay.
It helped build me. It helped build me as a man.
That's fair.
So I am generally somebody who's very annoyed with people at movie theaters who are like looking at phones or getting there late or whatever. So we're here at Radio City Music Hall, and I think it's fair to say the shows were sold out, very in demand, like quite a moment to be at the Shane Gillis show at Radio City Music Hall a week after SNL, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
The show time is 7 p.m. There's two openers. He doesn't go on till like 7:25. For the first 15 minutes of his set, people were still coming in with their drinks from the back.
Yeah.
Can't find their seats. I am incredibly distracted by this and it pisses me off. Like, your only job is to get there by the time the guy fucking starts. As a guy on stage, does murmuring and people moving around distract you while you're doing your comedy?
You know, normally no. It's interesting you say it. In a theater setting, it might, with people trying to get to their seats. I mean, 90% of the time you're at a comedy club, you're at a bar, people are coming into the table, you know, there's paying of bills, there's all sorts of things that can happen, ordering drinks. You obviously want people ordering drinks generally. It makes for a better show. 7:25 is pretty quick for the headliner to go on for a 7 o'clock show. Usually there would be, you know, some 35 minutes in there at least, where, you know, giving people a chance to load in. It's a tough one because you get it. But yeah, but 15 minutes in, the fact that people are rolling in, you're right. I mean, hypothetically, they paid a lot of money for this. They should want to see him. They should want to see the whole thing, especially because the opening of the show, usually you open with something strong or something immediate that you want people to see. So yeah.
What makes you mad?
Yeah. What makes you mad when you're on stage?
It's interesting. We had at my taping, we had a discussion about popcorn because the venue serves popcorn and it's honestly one of the great things about seeing a show at this venue is you get free popcorn and they have various toppings and, you can season your popcorn any way you like, which like great. But then when you're recording something, you're like, no. So we had to cut the popcorn off because we were shooting it. So we had to be like, no, we don't want people to get it.
I'd have been so fucking pissed at you. Forget about being mad at them. I'd have been pissed at you. What about my popcorn, dude?
I was like, you can get the popcorn after. I was like, we'll give you a coupon for popcorn. But I have heard about other comedians performing at this venue who have specifically instructed to turn the popcorn off because they get so annoyed by the popcorn. Yeah.
That's such a funny request to say when you're upset. Hey, turn the popcorn off.
Yeah, it's in my rider. Not only do I not get popcorn, nobody gets popcorn.
Yes, it's nice to have a rider with things you don't get.
Yeah.
We don't want this. Don't give him popcorn. He'll freak out.
Nothing.
No almonds. No popcorn.
Yeah.
Can we talk about Michael Rubin for a second? I feel like that's a good topic for all of us. I feel like it's good comic fodder.
Sure.
Michael Rubin appeared at the Sloan Conference earlier this week. And said the following. Now that I'm not part of the ownership group of the Sixers, I think I can say this. I think I was violating every rule the NBA had. Like, you're not allowed to take bets on your own team, but I was taking bets on the Sixers. I own a sports betting business. You're not allowed to do individual contracts with athletes. We had individual deals with athletes. You're not allowed to have players that are investors in your business. LeBron is an investor in our business. Joel Embiid is an investor in our business. James Harden is an investor in our business. Chris Paul, Kevin Durant. All these guys were investors in our business. If you look through the rules of the leagues, it didn't work for me to own part of a team. How do we feel about Michael Rubin retroactively admitting that he was breaking every single rule that the NBA had while owner of the Sixers?
Am I allowed to think that that's cool and also think that he should be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law? Can I hold both opinions at once?
There's a lot of crimes that are cool, I think. I think you could say you look cool doing them. Like cigarette. It's not a crime, but like smoking looks cool and it's bad for you. So I think
the crime of smoking.
Yeah. Is Matt, this, thoughts?
Is it possible? Is he just trying to distract people from the see-through pants?
That's gotta
be
it.
Is that what's happening? He's just sort of like, I'm going to admit to a bunch of other stuff so that everybody stops focusing on the fact that the pants are see-through.
He did deny that it's his fault. He said that the pants are see-through.
That sounds cool. I guess I trust him. I guess I trust him. MLB was like, we got to see Dick. The fans want to see Dick. The players want to show Dick. And if you don't show them, we'll get another clothing designer that will give us Dick in on the field.
I think it's fair to say also that multiple people have to mess up for the pants to be see-through, right?
Everybody. Yeah, you don't want to put the blame on one guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's probably on more than one person. He said he made it exactly to the specs that Nike is sort of getting off scot-free on this entire thing, given that it's their brand and they just farmed it out to Fanatics. It's not Fanatics brand pants or whatever. It's Nike. Imagine I don't know who the Michael Rubin of Nike is. Some, guy fresh off a divorce with his shirt off, having white parties for Nike. Who's messing things up.
Matt, you played baseball growing up, right?
Very poorly, but yes, I actually am now a youth baseball coach for my son, and I have I have zero idea what I'm doing.
How old's your son?
He's 9 now. When they were 7 or 8, it was literally just like, hey, eye on the ball, just the most basic. And now that he's 9 and kids are good, and I'm like, oh man, I have nothing to impart to these children. I have no baseball wisdom. I was really I'm a slightly better coach than I am a player. I was a player. I was awful, but I did play youth baseball. Yeah.
Well, imagine you get all the way there. You're a hotshot high school prospect.
Yeah.
You go through the minor league system, a grueling system. You get paid very little, breaking labor laws left and right, but you finally get to the major leagues and you're there and your first jersey that you get, it's your own. Has a very clear outline of your dick.
Yeah.
Wait, the jersey now?
That's the jersey, the whole kit. Uniform. Everybody
accidentally came out with a patch on their sleeve that was an exact replica of their own dick.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Yeah. It may as well. Show's better on TV, I think. That would be tough for me, I think. I think it would be like the amount of how much I worked to get to where I am and to be like, now I have to be worried at the plate about how much of my dick is showing in these pants.
I mean, you're all in it together. And, you know, that's the important thing. But it is, I mean, they used to bring up like a rookie, you know, I mean, isn't it interesting? I guess they fought to have the rookies play at the beginning of the season, right? Because they used to manipulate the service time and the rookie would come up in May and he would think by that time they have the see-through pants fixed. So in a sense, it's the Players Association's fault that the rookies are now playing at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, they're like, I don't know, manipulate me a little bit more. Yeah, exactly. Maybe. Give me a little bit of time.
Yeah.
You're a Sixers fan.
I am, yes.
Seth Meyers, Knicks fan.
No. Seth is a Boston guy. He has weird rooting interests because he is a Boston guy, but he also in football is a Pittsburgh Steelers fan. So he's one of these weird sports bigamists. Well, he's not technically a sports bigamist because he only has one team in each sport.
He just dabbles in different cities.
Yeah, Steelers, Red Sox, and then I think Celtics to a lesser extent. Yeah.
How much do the Sixers come up in the writer's room at Seth Meyers?
We have a surprising number of Philly. The Sixers do not come up frequently. The Eagles, certainly. We have a couple of other writers who are Eagles fans, Philly people. We have one writer who's currently living in Philly, actually. We have another Philly guy. And we all, the big day for us, obviously the Super Bowl was huge, but then we did have Malcolm Jenkins on the show a few days after the Super Bowl. We all got to meet him. We all got to take pictures. That was very exciting. I think that was the one day where more than anything it came up at work was the Philly connection. But there are a few Philly people.
That's pretty good. When the fact that I have a Sixers podcast comes up in any writer's room, I invariably have to be like, I don't want to talk about it. Like, please do not bring it up to me here. I would rather not. My real job, people see me acting how I act here in this environment.
No, I mean, at this point, everybody has a side hustle. I think you're okay. But yes, yeah. I mean, it would be strange if somebody tuned in because they were your coworker and they knew nothing about the Sixers. And then the level of esoteric might be shocking.
We got an email that I would like both of your perspectives on that. I think we need to figure out whether CJ should be worried, actually, whether he could be harmed because of this. Now, CJ, Matt is our producer. You can pop in there, CJ. I think we need to see your face as I read this. Hey. This came from Fox, writes to RickySanchez@gmail.com. I've been thinking of writing something along these lines for a while now. And that one listener email about their dream about working for Team Ricky made me decide to pull the trigger. This is going to sound a little bit crazy. I swear I'm normal. Please just bear with me here. Of course, what I was going to follow is not normal at all. Long story short, I feel like there's a world where I could have been CJ. And I won't lie, it's hard not to just be a touch jealous seeing him on the pod. I know this comes across as petty and at best and Stan writing to Eminem at worst. So I want to clarify that it's not the case at all. I'm a huge fan of everything CJ brings to the pod. The way he consistently updates the intro is amazing and one of the main reasons I watch on YouTube. I just thought this might make for a fun email, so here goes. When CJ first showed up at the pod, I remember thinking, man, that should be me. By the way, that was how many years ago? 4 years ago? I've been an AV guy since high school. Whether it's theater production or my college radio station, I'm no stranger to a soundboard. I had a digital media job as my work study where I edited videos and graphics for the business school, and above all, I was obsessed with the Sixers. I'd even thought to myself several times while listening to the pod, it seems like these guys could use a tech guy / producer, so it was a blow when I eventually heard that the position had already been filled.
A blow.
The jealousy of this made me want to dislike CJ. But as he started to appear more and more on the pod and on the filter in, I knew deep down I never could. We're so similar. To hate him would be to hate myself. We have the same taste in music. We have similar groups of outdoorsy friends. And based on the Briggs auction segments, we have the same taste in furniture. Sure, some of this can be attributed to both being 20-something dudes, but still, it's hard not to imagine a timeline where I reached out to you guys or saw a tweet about a job listing or something and ended up with CJ's gig. Maybe in another life, I suppose. That isn't what happened, though, and I have come to terms with that a while ago. I got a lovely gig running gaming partnerships with Twitch streamers, and CJ is a perfect fit for the Ricky in a way I'm sure I could never be. Anyway, thanks for maybe reading this. CJ, if you ever need a production assistant, you know who to call. So do we, there's a lot of single white female stuff going on right here. Is CJ somebody who should look twice when he leaves his apartment, maybe make sure that there's not a hole drilled in the wall, somebody watching along? Is this something to be concerned about?
I think you all should be concerned. I mean, this is somebody who can't come within 50 feet of your operation. I don't know. This is a scary... I mean, Mike, you've gotten these emails before from people who want to break into the business. Spike, I'm sure you've gotten them as well, too.
Sure.
And there's a way to write them. And that ain't it. You know, I mean, you want someone to humble themselves. Oh, conciseness is a huge virtue. That email was not concise.
Nope.
You know, and you want them as someone who says, you know, in a genuine way, hey, I'm interested in doing what you do, and I would love to get any advice from you, and I understand you're busy, but please, you know, if you ever have any time, I'd love to, you know, never say pick your brain. That's a big turnoff for me. I never want to, but someone who's sort of like, I feel like I could be you, or I feel like I could have your job. That's pretty demeaning right there.
And we have the same sorts of friends and the same interests, like all of that stuff.
I want to be in your friend group. Yeah, that's pretty cool. It is a little bit of like a romantic. It feels romantic to me.
Yeah.
In like a what could have been, like there's a forlorn sort of like long lost love for this position and CJ's specs.
CJ, your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought it was pretty sweet. I've never gotten something like this before. And I definitely had people that I looked up to in ways in similar fields before I was here. So, and this is definitely the first time someone's emailed in to say something like this. So maybe I'm naive. Maybe I get them a couple more, and then if they're a stalker, then that'll turn me off for sure. But I thought it was sweet. It's endearing. Thank you. I appreciate this.
Did we have like a job, like a, was there a job posting, or did CJ just shoot a shot?
No, you started putting the pod on YouTube and it looked very bad. So I emailed Spike.
I was trying.
Said,
I was trying my best.
That's not the way to do it. Yeah. Specific advice, specific feedback is, you know, is always helpful. Yeah. Here are some specific ways in which I can help your operation.
Inherit your skin.
Yeah.
Yes.
And live in your home.
Yeah. I love how
your friends are my friends now.
The question is, what former Sixers head is going to end up in CJ's bed when he wakes up in the morning?
Where did you record your special?
We recorded at a Caveat on the Lower East Side in Manhattan, which is where my friend and I have a regular show there once a month. And it's sort of a, you know, it's kind of a cool looking place. It was great. It was supposed to be an album recording. I've recorded, this is my second album, and so it was going to be a stand-up album recording. And about 3 weeks before, we decided, well, we're going to have, you know, 80 people in one room, 90 people in one room. Let's just shoot it. Let's just bring cameras in. And so I hired a crew to shoot it. It came out great. And then edited it together. The album actually will come out on Friday, the 8th, finally. But the special came out. We just sort of released it on my YouTube. And shockingly, people are watching it. I really had no expectation that anybody would watch it. I did stand up on Seth the night that it came out, and I knew people would see that clip because obviously they have their own massive YouTube following. Then you know, people watch all the stuff, and then so I knew that people would see that, and that was great. That came out great. I was happy with that. But the idea that anybody would watch the stand up special, I was honestly kind of shocked by. And now we're doing pretty well, so I'm happy.
What are some comments you get about yourself as a, because it's stand up, it's really you. Like when you're acting in something or you're writing something, you can hide behind something else, but you can't blame a coach. You can't blame a system.
No. Yeah.
This is all you. So what are some of your best, the best and maybe most hateful comments that you've gotten?
People on YouTube have been shockingly very nice.
Wow.
And
it time.
There have been some backhanded things. The meanest thing the least nice thing people will sometimes say is like, hey, Matt, that was pretty good. Keep at it. you know, like, don't, yeah. And I'm like, oh, I'm keeping at it. Like, you're not, you know, but, you know, people, or sometimes people will use it as a backhanded swipe of being like, hey, now I can see why Seth puts you on the show. Like, you should have been first. Like, the rest of the show was done. And I'm just like, don't insult the show that I write for. People just don't. Some people don't know how to give a proper compliment. Sure. Even when they're trying.
Or don't know how many.
Yeah.
How many, you know, wounds we have.
Yes, exactly.
Easily pokeable with a very short knife.
But one of the things that people have said to me, which I ended up working into this special, which is funny, which is, you know, and this is a classic thing. You come off stage and someone goes, hey, you're a great writer. And it's like, you know, which is basically an insult to your performance skill. Mm-hmm. But, so people have been pretty, I don't get a lot of like direct. I did have one other story of a direct fan interaction that was negative that was in the special. But shockingly, people have said don't read the YouTube comments, and I have been reading them because I can't keep away, and they are pretty good. I mean, people have been pretty nice, pretty complimentary. That's very good. Yeah.
Do you have what's the your favorite all time comedy album?
Who are your guys?
Who are my guys? That's a great question. You know, when I was a kid, I had a tape that I got. It was two things that I recorded. It was a cassette tape, and on one side was Eddie Murphy, and on the other side was Emo Phillips,
which Emo is like Phillips
you
is great.
Could not be two more different. But I love them both, and I wore the tape out, and I listened to it a lot over and over again for sure. Yeah, I loved Seinfeld, obviously, and the Richard Lewis thing, real sad. But I mean, I wasn't as familiar with his stand up, but I went back and watched a bunch of clips this week after he died. But I loved all comedy growing up for sure. You know, sketch, sitcoms, everything.
It does feel like we're in another, I would say, like maybe late 80s, early 90s, or mid 80s to mid 90s was a big peak for stand ups and for comedians in general. And it feels like there's that whatever has gone on over the last 5-6 years or whatever, it does feel like we're in another time where comedians have hit a point like that. There's a lot of good ones and a lot of them are doing quite well. You know, it's sort of
and our scene is hot.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, it's interesting. Usually SNL, you get maybe one comedian as a year as the host of the show. And Shane was the second one to host this year after Nate Bargatze. So, I mean, you know, and not just two comedians, but two people getting their first shot to host the show. And I mean, for sure. I mean, I thought Nate knocked it out of the park, and I'm sure he'll get another chance. And for sure, it's a moment where people are breaking through into the mainstream. It's pretty awesome to see.
What is your relationship like with the Sixers? Because the Sixers, for me, when things are going reasonably well or reasonably bad, I can make jokes about them. But there's sometimes when it's very upsetting, and it's like it's not funny anymore. I can't do it, and I don't want to talk to anybody about it.
The Eagles are the most that's where it becomes the most tough for me when the Eagles go bad. The Sixers, you know, I if I'm being totally honest, I've faded out a little, knowing Embiid is hurt,
so
and knowing that it's not the team we're gonna see. I'm sort of like, well, I did manage to watch some. I wanted to be prepared. I've watched some of today, but I you know, I'm sort of like, it's like you guys said, I mean, this is not the team that's going to be, they've sort of, you know, because of the play-in, they're going to have a chance at the postseason. And assuming Embiid's back, I mean, they're going to have a shot, you know. I prepared to be crushed and disappointed at the end of the season in some way, even though it seems like a little bit now we're playing with house money, where like if we're this, you know, end up being the sixth seed or the seventh seed, you're sort of going, well, you know, they were not really. But once they get their full complement of guys back, I mean, and assuming Embiid is like, you know, 80-90% healthy, they should be pretty good, right? I don't know.
I think we ran out of house money like 5.5, 6
years. Yeah, that's
ago.
Probably fair.
At least,
yeah.
I am in debt to the house.
Yeah. The house, we're not answering our phone. We're not opening the mail that comes. If the door knocks at a weird time, we're not answering it. The house wants their money back.
I'm going to get shaken down for sure.
I did look it up, though. I was interested because I kept thinking, you know, as who knows, you're the sixth or the seventh seed, you could sneak into, you know, obviously as the Sixers, we're used to being disappointed. We're used to being the favorite and then losing. But do you guys know when the last time the one seed in the East made the NBA Finals was?
Was it that Cavs championship year?
2016 Cavs. Eight years. They lost the Warriors, I think, that year. But they
Say I don't know anything about basketball.
There you go.
That's what people say.
So it's been 8 years since the one seed made the finals. So usually it's the Heat that is like a low seed and runs the table. But yeah. I feel like the East, anything could happen. You know, I don't know.
I like you bringing a statistic.
Well, I was curious the other day because I was like, because when we were kids, I remember it was always the best team in the NBA that won. Maybe in other sports, you know, there was that one year I remember it was a strike and the Knicks were the eight seed and mm-hmm. they went to the finals. But other than that, I mean, it was always one or two. And now it feels like you get into the playoffs and, you know, someone's gelling at the right time. Anything could happen. So maybe that could be us. I don't know. It would be very Sixers like in all the years we're expected to do well, we collapse and disappoint everybody. And then the one year where nobody is expecting us to do anything, who knows?
Well, I have $50 riding on it at plus +2200 with DraftKings. So
yeah, that was the right moment. You got it at the right moment. Yeah. Preseason was, you know, boy.
We have given, I have had on pod and off pod arguments with Daryl about the fact that the Sixers team has not beaten anybody that is good. And so
in the playoffs,
almost by definition now, because they will be 5-6, whatever the team that they beat, if they win a round this year,
yes,
it will be the best team that they have beaten in this era.
It will be the best team they've beaten. I will say, though, if they beat the Cavs, it will feel a little fraudulent in that as bad as the Cavs looked in the playoffs last year, it feels like there'll be a fake two seed if we end up beating the Cavs.
Well, they were better than the Raptors team, which is currently the best.
Yes, I'm saying it will be the best, but good. I think it'll still be difficult to say. If the Cavs lose in the first round after losing in the first round last year, it'll be more about them sucking than the Sixers being good.
Let me have it.
Well, I'm just saying. We got this voicemail from 833 Lickface.
Hey, Spike, Mike, DJ. This message is in particular.
And Matt.
Particular for the guy that makes the Coach Mike and Player Mike jingles. I was wondering if we could get a Horny Mike jingle. I was listening to the latest pod when I heard this little clip.
He's not making any shots at all, even the daddy touch shots. Ah, daddy.
And yeah, whenever Mike's talking about handsome players on the Sixers or just anything sex related, if we could get a Horny Mike jingle, that'd be great. Basketball question. The Celtics really scare me this year. I think they're a really dangerous team. Wouldn't be shocked at all if they won the title. Had me thinking to the last time a team won a title without a consensus top 3 to 5 player, probably about 10 years ago when the Spurs won with a younger Kawhi. Do you think the Celtics will win the title this year? What would that mean for the Sixers if they did? And then non-basketball question specifically for Mike, what's your biggest kink? Thanks. Have a great day, guys.
So we need Horny Mike music?
I don't think, first of all, sure. Absolutely. Won't say no to that. I can identify a player's attractiveness without being horny for that. I would say that there's a distinction there. Hmm. The Celtics winning would be pretty destructive for me. I do think they're the best team in the NBA. I don't like them.
I think Denver's the best team in the NBA.
It is nice that Boston has not won a championship in this era, that they have owned the Sixers so much, and yet we have the same amount of championships.
Finals once, right? And conference finals 3 times or 4 times?
A lot.
Yeah. And Jason Tatum just turned 26. I think he's been in the conference finals 4 times and the finals once.
It's unpleasant.
It is unpleasant. Them winning the championship, honestly, for me, wouldn't feel any worse than them beating us in the second round or something.
That's probably right.
You know, like they've already had so much more success than the Sixers during this era that it would be like the cherry on top.
How much spite do you operate from, Matt, as a fan? I have a feeling.
I was going to say, on the topic of spite, I mean, if we can somehow beat the Bucks in the playoffs, that would feel like a championship, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm. Beating Doc would feel very good.
Yeah. Yes. It is weird that the Celtics are the one seed, and it does feel like they're due. Like, there are multiple teams, there are us and them, that feel like we're due for, Spite is for sure a big rooting interest. I mean, that's why, I mean, man, I was, you know, despite everything, you know, despite Taylor Swift, despite the Chiefs being, you know, winning however many championships they've won, I was sort of like, there's no way the 49ers can win this Super Bowl. I was very happy to see them lose. So spite for sure is a big motivator for me.
I think it's in the water in Philadelphia. I think that is something we can all rally behind. It is almost more fun to root against someone than it is to root for your team.
Yes, almost.
Almost. Mm-hmm. When they're doing well. Yeah, I guess we could do a Horny Mike song.
Yeah.
Me saying daddy like that was fun, and yeah, I would do it again.
I think so. I think a Horny Mike song would be good. I like this idea. Now, our listeners oftentimes think outside the box. This is an outside the box idea from Scott. Writes RickySanchez@gmail.com. Hi, Spike, Mike, and CJ, and Matt. Should the Sixers use one of their open roster spots to sign Elton Brand, as players cannot get in trouble for tampering, and it would allow early discussions for how we spend this future cap space, and as a bonus, it wouldn't look any worse than watching Mo Bamba. The idea of signing a player who cannot play but is an executive to the roster so he can tamper without getting in trouble is an amazing idea. I would like for the Sixers to do it, if only for the NBA to shut it down and say that they can't do it.
Tamper in the sense that he can then go talk to other players about coming to play for them?
Like, Daryl can't talk to players about coming to play for the Sixers, but the players can. There's no tampering with players. You're not allowed to. It can't be said as tampering. So they'd
be doubling down on the tampering is what they would be. Yeah.
Yeah. Double jeopardy of tampering.
I think it's a good idea.
I think it's a really good idea. I mean, this is not dissimilar to what, like, Udonis Haslam was.
No.
As a player.
And Elton Brand is like a legit executive. And I'm sure he's still in fine shape. He'd look good in a uniform, whatever. Like, we can put him in there. We've already signed him once.
He doesn't have to wear a uniform. He can just come to the game. He's not going to play.
Well, it'd be fun to see him wear a uniform. There's our GM in the uniform.
It's a little bit like Sixers fantasy camp if he's in uniform. There's a Elton, God bless him, good looking man, but has aged.
Yes.
Has certainly aged. Would not, I think even NBA players wearing a uniform is silly. Like, when having, like, Charlie Manuel and Larry Boa having to wear, like, Phillies uniforms
is amazing.
Is great and so silly.
I would like to see NBA coaches back in suits, by the way. Like,
or uniforms. Why not?
Yes, uniform. Nick Nurse in the
long shorts.
The quarter zip and the Lululemon pants. What are we doing here? Like, you're supposed to be a coach, not like the summer league. It's the NBA. You should be in a suit. Like, put on a tie. Let's grow up. Final question.
I want to hear Matt's opinion on fashion, on coach
fashion.
Was
there a player coach? I mean, you hear about it, like, back in the day, like, there'd be like a player who also was the coach. That feels like a fun era.
What, like Bill Russell?
Pete Rose, manager, exactly. Where, like, a guy would come, be like sweating, come off the, you know, court, and then you had to get everybody in a huddle. I don't know. That seems like a fun double duty. I like that.
Imagine if it was a football player coach. Maybe it's happened in the past. Not that I can think of. But, like, just getting fucking jacked up and then having to, like, crawl back over and be like, call a play.
Yeah.
Oh, that would be tough.
Final one. I like this. This comes from Alex. Writes to RickySanchez@gmail.com. Could you imagine a Bucks-Clippers finals, and what is the worst outcome in that finals series? So this would, of course, be Doc Rivers versus James Harden. What is worse?
I didn't get that. Could you try again?
Wow, again, twice.
Fucking that? No, that's fucking Siri, because I said...
Twice in one episode.
That happens sometimes with Siri. So anyway.
CJ, get your boy under control.
Oh, boy. If some of them start producing over there, what is the worst outcome? Harden winning a title with the team we traded him to, or Doc winning a title with this year?
There's so many bad outcomes that could be possible.
Yeah.
There's so many.
Yeah.
Well,
it's tough for me. I would rather, I'll go first here. I would rather see the Bucks win it. Doc's already won a championship. Like, Harden, us trading Harden to a team, and then that team immediately winning the championship is worse. I'm sorry, it's worse than Doc winning another title to me, and it's not even close.
I wouldn't mind, you know, if PJ Tucker got to win a championship, I'd be excited for him. So I'll take the Clippers.
He's already won a championship.
Yeah, I know. Well, you know, give him another one. He's a great player. He's a good guy. Yeah, I can't. Just Doc being proven right, that would really upset me.
Because
we were right. The Harden trade, no matter what, like, that was the right decision. We had to do it. There was no way around it. I mean, that was just inevitable. But Doc's cockamamie, you know, scheme to like plot himself back into the Bucks. I mean, it's just like, or him being like, no, me solve. Doc Rivers will solve everything. Like, that theory being proven correct would really upset me.
I think he's right.
It would flip my entire worldview.
It'd be bad. It'd be bad for my worldview. And I think I like my worldview where it is. 2008 was a long time ago for Doc. That's a long time ago. And he's made so much money since then. And he has lied about so many things since then. Harden being the third best player on a championship team with Kawhi and Paul George, even though, like, yes, not an outcome I like, I think would go like, yeah, like, they're very good and they stayed healthy and that's fine. Ty Lue's a great coach. That'd be fine. The Ty Lue Doc Rivers assistant head coach situation would be fun there as well. Obviously, Giannis has already won one. I guess I root for Dame, although I do think his career is a downturning as we speak and will be pretty bad in 2 years. I agree with Matt that Doc Rivers winning a championship after Colangelo-ing himself into the job would really fuck me up in a tough way. And like, obviously they have a very talented team. Brooke Lopez is incredible. If Chris Middleton stays healthy, they're incredible. Like, they're really good players on that team, even if they're a little thin. And Giannis is obviously one of the three or four best players in the world. If Doc wins one, I'll be in the dark. Mm. I'll be in the dark for sure.
Hmm. Well, maybe it's my personal, I was obviously far more James Harden than I ever was anti-Doc, far more anti-James Harden than I ever was anti-Doc. So personally, it would be tougher for me.
It's situational for me. If it was Harden, like, going and doing the version of that he wanted to play in Philadelphia and that they didn't let him, he just got to do like, okay, just me step back, everybody step away. He really is doing a lot of just facilitating and like moving the ball a little bit. I think it's also probably more likely that Milwaukee wins a championship just because like talent could win out. And if they're healthy, then they will have a shot, especially if somebody else takes out Boston. And Giannis is just really good. He's just really, really good. He imposes his will more than anybody else in the league does. So
I reserve the right to change my mind. If the Clippers win the title on like a Kawhi Leonard shot that bounces off the rim four times.
Yeah.
That would kill me maybe more. So maybe then I'd flip back to the Bucks. Yeah.
Did you see that Clippers Steve Ballmer like arena video? Did you guys
watch it? It's weird with the Lakers fans in there like shooting baskets and the, is that what you're talking about?
I'm talking about like the promotion for like the wall of fans.
No, I did not see that.
In the new Intuit Dome that they're building in LA for the Clippers to move into next season. It's like, it's such a like tech guy like idea where it's like, we're going to have a wall of fans. It's going to go straight. It's like our green monster. It's going to go straight up and only our fans are allowed in there. And you have to be wearing our colors and you can't trick us.
It's
no
kind
tricks.
Of like, well, they do that with the union does that with Sons of Ben. I think the supporter sections at MLS stadiums do that. You can't buy the Sons of Ben tickets unless you're in Sons of Ben. Like, they can't go on StubHub, but the union have a dedicated group of fans that go to every game. The Clippers do not.
It's just very clear that like the Clippers and the Nets are very much not like they shouldn't be in the cities that they are because they are ultimately like so clearly the second choice. And you're just not to like build in a big expensive arena. Like the thing the Clippers had going for them, this is what Alyssa said, who's lived here her whole life, is that like the Clippers tickets were at least cheap. And then now they're going to be like as expensive as Lakers tickets. And they have limited to no culture and just a freak owner that wants to like lose his goddamn mind. I think it's funny to like
be in the secondary city, the second team in the city stuff, and be like, and here's how we're going to do it. Here's how we're going to prevent other people from coming. And we're actually going to be our own thing. And it's just like, man,
probably not going
to
work.
Just go somewhere else. Go to a different city. Establish that.
Well, anyway, Matt, we wish you the best of luck with your special. When does the album come out? And wait a minute, how is the album different than the YouTube special?
It's slightly different. The album will be on audio platforms and SiriusXM. It's just it's very similar to the special that's currently on YouTube. But it's fun because I have one other album, and sometimes people will be cruising around in the car, and one of my tracks from that, my album that came out 6-7 years ago, will still pop up on one of the comedy channels. So that's fun. So the ability to have that happen, and people can also listen to it, you know, and, but similar material, and, the special is out now. It's been out for a few weeks on my YouTube channel.
Well, you're very funny. I always laugh at your shit when it pops up on my Instagram. You have a very funny stage presence and a slow paced. You're not rushing through anything.
These are those backhanded compliments.
No, this is
no,
compliment.
I'm joking. Funny. I'm joking.
And you have the show, the special ends at some point.
I don't know.
I appreciate it. Thank you, Mike. I appreciate it. I appreciate you guys having me on. This is a blast. It feels like we've been circling each other for a while, so I'm glad I finally got to do it.
Yes, sir.
When Mike suggested, I was kind of surprised that you weren't already on. You feel like one of the people that is in the group of people who has already been on. But then I realized it was the guy who has the podcast about going to the bathroom.
Yeah, exactly. Especially because I'm on a text chain with a Philly sports fan text chain with multiple other people who've been guests on the pod. So,
sure.
Yeah.
We thank you, buddy. Thanks for coming on. Good luck.
Thank
with the
you.
Special.
I appreciate it.
Thanks, buddy. Good luck.
Thanks.
If you ever have a chance to go see Matt, just go and heckle him just incessantly. Just
loud popcorn.
Loud popcorn. Don't even let him get a joke out.
That'll be the trick.
Well, we are back on Wednesday night as the Sixers play somebody good on Wednesday, right?
No.
Oh, wrong. Good.
It's a Nets Grizzlies back to back.
Oh, great. And so, the Nets game is Tuesday and the Grizzlies game is Wednesday.
That's
is
that it.
Well, the Nets are not good and the Grizzlies are not good. So who did Mike say would be better than Dame in 3 years?
It was Gabe Vincent, who has been out the entire season pretty much.
Yeah.
So that's a tough wagon to hitch myself to. But it was more about Dame being old and small point guards aging poorly than it was about how much I love and believe in Gabe Vincent, who I think is just fine.
Yeah. All right. We will talk to you Wednesday night. Thank you, Matt. Thank you, CJ Stalker. And thank you, Kelly Oubre. Are you down with TTP?
Yeah. You know Lickface. We should have CJ Stalker replace him for one episode.
If you don't fuck with me, then I won't fuck with you.
If you don't fuck with me,
then I won't fuck with you.
But if you fuck with me,
I'm gonna fucking kill you!
Time for Plan B.